Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham, and this week joining me to talk about Claire Denis' Let the Sunshine In is the contributing editor to Liz White Lies, Sophie Mox-Kaufman. Hello, Sophie.
Hi, Jake.
And regular podcast co-host Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Back from a lovely holiday and from South Africa, You have in fact let the sunshine in to London, despite the fact we're recording in a basement with only a small portion of natural light. The sunshine has very much come in. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah, happy to see the sun in London. Yeah.
Now this film, the latest from Claire Denis, it's been 5 years since Bastards, and we're going to get High Life later this year. And Sophie, you were the first person in the room to really see this film, and that was almost a year ago today.
Absolutely. It was a very special and memorable occasion. Like, there are a handful of times when you watch a film that is so thematically close to what you're going through in your life that it feels like a part of you. And Let the Sunshine In is about a recently divorced woman who then encounters a slew of new men. I didn't encounter a slew of new men, but I was very freshly single when I saw it, and it's life-affirming thesis of just being open to life and not being defensive just like totally nourished me. And it was opening the director's fortnight at Cannes.
Yeah, and it's been 30 years since Claire Denis played in the actual competition of Cannes with her film Chocolat. I apologise for my butchering of the French language throughout this episode.
Definitely say Chocolat, because otherwise people will think you're talking about the other Juliette Binoche Johnny Depp film.
True.
Chocolat, set in Cameroon.
And that's still the only time that a Denis film has played in competition at Cannes. But it's,
let's riot, I say.
Yeah. When you say the name Claire Denis, people associate like such prestige with that and such power, and it feels like sometimes these just get brushed under the rug, particularly with Let the Sunshine In. I think people have high expectations for High Life, and coming just a year before that, maybe this one's having a bit of a quiet time, which it shouldn't really, because it's a really fabulous film. We do actually have an interview with Claire, and that was with Josh Smith, who was going to be here today to talk about it, because he's such a great and passionate Denis fan, but sadly he had to pull out last minute. But he's a member of the Curzon team, and as well as being the programmer for the Japanese Avant-Garde and Experimental Film Festival. And so we'll play that for you in a bit. But before we do, let's get a bit of a background on this film, because Sophie, this is definitely not an adaptation of Roland Barthes' Lover's Discourse.
No, as indeed it inaccurately says in the film's Wikipedia page, it is not an adaptation. This is a very popular misconception, because Claire Denis was, I think, in talks with the Barthes estate to adapt it, but she says that they took a look at her script for Let the Sunshine In. In her words, she said they said it was shit, but I'm sure they said something more diplomatic than that, and also they were incorrect, and say that they're very, very much not affiliated with Let the Sunshine In, or by its French name, which is more poetic, Un Beau Soleil Intérieur.
Yeah, which has a different translation directly as well. It's a great sunshine inside. When we're looking at Binoche's character, I think it's in the French translation, interior. It feels like a more interior title, whereas perhaps Let the Sunshine In feels like an exterior title that's reflecting onto her.
I agree. Yeah, I Let the Sunshine In just sounds kind of wrong when you watch the film and you see what it's about.
It's better, I think, in French.
Yeah, I think there is maybe some misconception about what this film might be, and there is a lot of maybe easy coverage just to say it's a Claire Denis rom-com, and I don't think necessarily that is what this is. I think that's
reductive.
Well, I think it's accurate to say it's a Claire Denis rom-com, but you have to understand what Claire Denis means. So it only undersells it if you're not already in love with and enthralled to Claire Denis. And Claire Denis is someone who makes the most evocative, mood-driven types of films. And so this is a kind of unusual film for her because there's a lot of dialogue. Like, the characters are kind of in non-stop conversation. But unlike, I would say preconceptions about the rom-com are that it's kind of quite chirrupy and surface level. And this is very much about what it means in your soul to be open to romance. And the men that Juliette Binoche's character Isabelle encounters in the course of the film, they're, shall we say, not ideal. Juliette Binoche in this, she's a performer who never turns in a dud, but this is still, even for her, a career best performance because she just channels this extreme vulnerability and receptivity to intimacy, and she just comes alive with whoever she's with. It's comic just simply because she encounters these men very earnestly and takes them as they are, but Claire Denis' camera and Christine Angot's script, which she co-wrote with Denis, has perhaps a more wry sensitivity and a sense of how games are being played. So it is a rom-com, but it's a soulful rom-com, and it's one that just can make you want to give people a chance. Which
sincere.
Is, yeah.
It's really sincere. Yeah. I like that you said the camera work sort of gives you insight into the power dynamics between her and these men, and specifically the bar scene, which I think it stood out for me.
With the banker.
With the banker, yeah. That sort of, instead of doing a shot, reverse shot, it kind of flows the way that sort of the power play flows between them.
Well, it almost looks like they've done a few different takes, but they've all just always done it in a one take, and each time
the master was like, exactly. Yeah.
So just in case your listeners don't know, this is the first guy that Isabelle encounters, and he is this alpha banker type who is just abominably rude to this barman. But and Isabelle's quite impassive in watching him treat the barman like this, and the barman's quite impassive himself in being treated like that. So it's quite exposing of his character without feeling like a tense or overly cruel situation.
So this banker is the first of the men that we meet along this journey, and so to give some background about the character that Isabelle, that Juliette Binoche plays, she's an artist living in Paris. She's divorced. This affair is called off early in the film. I think he has the horrible line, like, "You're fantastic, but my wife is amazing."
Extraordinary.
Yeah. There we are. And so he returns to his wife, and Isabelle faces this issue of midlife loneliness. So there's an actor, there's a working class man who her milieu, as they so like to describe themselves, are not too fond of. And you've got a number of new admirers and jealous friends. And we just kind of go through these little ellipses of conversations with these men. But I think now might be a great time to go to our interview with Josh and Claire. And Sophie, you mentioned about this being a collaboration with Christine Angot, who's a playwright and novelist. And Josh takes a really nice opening point to the interview about this film blending those two artworks.
Claire Denis, thank you for joining us on the Curzon Film Podcast. We're here to talk about your latest film, Let the Sunshine In, which you co-wrote with Christine Angot. You've collaborated with Christine before on Voilà l'Enchantement.
Yeah.
And Let the Sun Shine In feels quite like novelistic in its character development. I wonder how you kind of navigated visual and literary representations in the film.
For me, I think novelistic, no, in a way. I'm a great fan of Christine. I've been reading a book. I went to listen to readings in theaters with actors, and that's how the first work we did, the little film, was really a, how could I say that, a great melting. I had no idea it was novelistic. I thought all the words of Christine are immediately ready for the film. You know, there is no barrier at all. Mm. No. Mm. I never thought of a barrier or a novelistic approach. Mm. I thought it was just talk, like in real life when words are looping in between characters, like a ball when you play ping pong or tennis, and sometimes it hurts, sometimes it's out, and sometimes it's just a noise or a rhythm. And I think, in fact, it's almost surrealistic. Mm. That there was never a question for me. You know, maybe after, when the film was finished, Christine told me, wow, it's incredible, you, the way you filmed it, as if she was surprised. And I told her, but you write like that. It was not difficult.
Mm. And it's hard to see anyone other than Juliette Binoche in this role.
Yeah.
She's able to kind of portray the vulnerability of Isabelle's character with a kind of openness and an honesty. I wonder whether you had Isabelle in mind when you were writing the part.
Isabelle, you mean Juliette?
Oh, sorry, Juliette, sorry.
Yeah. No, the thing is, because we were working, Christine is working fast, and for me it was also important that this project was fast, because I had another project in the perspective that was delayed. And truly, I saw no one. I was watching Christine when we were walking in a cafe, and probably she was watching and listening to me. And for me it was a mixture of me watching her and her listening to my questions, or you know, or hearing my laughing. I think for me it was a mixture of her and me, and because of her I thought this woman should be dark hair, maybe, not a blonde. And then Juliette Binoche is having agent, with also my agent, and he read the script, and Juliette read it, and she, we know each other very well, and she said, she asked me, she told me it's me, you know? And I said, if you feel like it, then let's go, you know? I told her immediately, I want to see your breast, I want to see your leg, I want you to wear leather jacket, high heel boots. I want you to be the most sexy woman ever. That's all I want you to think of. So Juliette understood so well, she accepted to be that woman, physically, sexy and strong, and yet to be able to show some of her weakness.
And she does. And that weakness is kind of is seen by a lot of others as well, obviously. I mean, I think you provide a kind of harsh critique of this toxic masculinity that we're seeing surface in the arts. And I'm thinking of Xavier Beauvoir's character, Vincent. He's a kind of Weinstein-like predatory figure.
Oh, no. First of all, we made the film before the Weinstein affair. Yeah. And Weinstein is not... there are millions of Weinsteins since the world exists, you know. You don't need Weinstein to imagine a guy like that. We have met a guy like that. Christine, me, and Juliette, probably. No doubt about that. But by having Xavier Beauvoir interpreted that guy, I made the character, I think, also lovable. Maybe he's using a perverse way to treat her. But it's clear in the film that she was in love with him. I cannot imagine falling in love with Harvey Weinstein. No. I think most of what I've read is about his use of power upon women, but also probably upon men, you know? So I don't think Xavier Beauvoir at all is in that category of men.
I only say that because there's the scene in the art gallery where Juliette, she's escaping his kind of predatory
it's
attention.
Not predation. He's trying, she said, she told him, go away, don't come. And Juliette is trying to, she's the one who push him out, you know. I don't think he's trying a predatory approach that is so tiny. Really, it's not a big fear.
She's
just leaving because he's like a fly above your plate, you know. A predatory affair. Someone with a predator is a danger. I think this art gallery is not a danger. No.
When she leaves, you cut to very, very quickly to a painting of a young girl lifting her skirt to a wolf.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I kind of made that connection between...
painting was also...
is she also inviting it? I wonder.
It's the painter in the beginning of the scene, Susan Osborne. It was her last painting, and I thought it was funny to see that someone, girl, are not afraid. I think.
Yeah.
Even when it's a big bad wolf.
Yeah. Well, that's good, yeah. I mean, also, I really love the end credit sequence. The way that it kind of interrupts this dialogue between Isabel and her fortune teller, played by Gerard Depardieu. And it kind of highlights the absurdity of their interaction and the sort of pointlessness of these endless conversations around relationships.
It's a looping.
And it's a great way of kind of like... I wondered whether this was a call from you to act more impulsively on our feelings and not to overanalyze relationship.
I never overanalyze. I hate overanalyze when I'm shooting. I think shooting is something we done it in one day, you know. This scene, it's 7 pages in the script, you know.
Wow.
And one shot on Gérard and one shot on Juliette. I had prepared my mind to do it like that, with this glorious light behind him, like gold. I think the necessity of this looping effect of those sentences, it could never end, you know? So I never wanted to say, this is the end of the film. I wanted this to go endless. And I think in a way, it's also what a fortune teller could. It's also more than it's a clairvoyant.
Mm.
What can you say about the future of someone? He says is the best. He says, open yourself, open, and I think it's great because it's true. It is true. When you're in sorrow, you think that you have to close the window, close the door, close your chest because the pain has to be kept inside. And in a way, the best treatment could be open up.
Yet he tries to insert himself into this future.
He is also trying to enter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's what I like best.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I want to also ask you,
I know someone.
about your next film, High Life. It looks like quite a departure from your previous work. You know, you've got Andre Benjamin, Robert Pattinson, Mia Goth, and it's your first English language feature.
No, I made a short one long time ago with Vincent Gallo.
Right, okay.
Keep It to Yourself in New York in 90. Mm.
So this is, am I right in saying it's co-written by Zadie Smith, or she's involved in the writing somehow?
She was not involved.
Okay.
I mean, there was the script was written in French
first,
with me and my usual co-writer, Jean-Paul Fargeau. And then it needed to be translated. And I asked the English producer, Oliver Dungy, who was at the origin of this film, like the one who told me, Claire, I would like to produce a film with you in English. I told him, I need someone to not only to translate, but someone I could be able to speak the dialogue with. And he introduced me to Zadie Smith and Nick, her husband, who's a poet. But I think for Zadie and Nick, it was already written. I don't think it was... There was nothing to do for the three of us. Mm. Like, we quickly abandoned the project, you know? And we kept the film translated the way it was. And reworked on the dialogue, but not with Zadie, you know? You say it's far from your other projects. Yeah, it's true, it's far because it's away from Earth.
Mm.
It's even away from the solar system. Yeah, it's far. I think the hardest thing, the most difficult thing was to get the film financed. Normally, it's not a big budget, but I think maybe the script was a little... not... I don't know what people expect of me. I don't know. The thing is, the people, the actors and actresses in the film are very dear to me. Like Andre Benjamin was dear to me for many reasons. And Juliette Binoche, of course. Mia Goth, immediately love at first sight. I do not make casting session. I don't test actor. I just met her in a hotel once, and then the day after we had lunch, and I mean, I don't like, if you feel something is going strong, then what can I test, you know? They have to test me, maybe, you know, to make sure I'm a good director.
Right.
How can I test them to make sure they are going to be good in the film? And Robert was the biggest surprise for me because I thought I wanted a middle-aged man. And I was so sure about that, that when I heard Robert was interested working with me through my producer and the casting agent, I was really afraid. I was afraid to be attracted because he was this very attractive young man. And I thought, no, this is not for me, for the film. This is not fair. I wanted a man in his 50s who had cut his heart away. I mean, he didn't want to love anyone anymore. Mm. How could this be possible with Robert? And Robert sort of, he did not convince me. I quietly wait until I really start seeing him.
Right.
Seeing the man he is, how precious he is, you know? And then suddenly the age thing disappear. Yeah, completely. And I will never regret that for sure.
Great, great. Well, very much look forward to it. Claire Denis, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so thanks to Josh and Claire for doing that. Really loved a lot of her answers there, particularly the first question about this idea of combining the writing style of a novelist to that of a film writer. And you really get a sense, listening to the interview, that she is thinking in images all the time. And because in each question she answered, she initially doesn't launch into it. It feels like she's really being careful about what she's saying. Mm. And a number of times she will wrap up the point by plucking an image out of thin air. In one of the questions, she ultimately ends the point with about a fly buzzing around soup. And she thinks
in visual images, I think, which is quite interesting. And the way that we spoke about this earlier, but the way that she answers her questions are quite, as you said, you know, she finds her point as she goes along. Mm. She kind of does this meandering sort of way of getting to her point, which I think that her film felt a little bit like that as well. You know, the sort of like, you said it before as well, is like these ellipses of moments or you know, the way that the film, the narrative is structured is not so much, well, structure is the wrong word to use, but it kind of flows from one sort of image and version of men and this woman to another, you know, through her life.
Yeah, Sophie, in the interview with you for Little White Lies, I think Claire mentioned about this idea of loops and looping conversations, and that's quite a big feature in the film.
Yeah, a lot of the comic touches come from the absurdity of these conversations. There's one especially great exchange that I don't want to say too much about because I don't want to spoil it, but it's with the actor and they're in a car together and they're deciding whether he's going to come up with her. And it just goes round in these circles that almost don't mean anything. And the real story is being told by a hand on the handle of the car door. And I think she's very good at kind of showing Yeah, because she's someone who is incredible at telling stories with images, and she's great at exposing how people's behaviour betrays them while their words might be doing something else.
And there's a lovely detail. It's not even given a close-up, but in the back, on the back wall of her living room is a poster for Etta James. And then a later point in the film, there is the most wonderful dance scene, which something that Claire Denis like focused on before, particularly, and a love of choreography. And this leads into this beautiful dreamlike moment where you're just able to watch two people really enjoying each other and enjoying each other's bodies and just getting enraptured with the music.
Yeah.
But I think there's also why I love that poster's there is because you hear At Last by Etta James in a romantic setting like a club, it's always going to feel super romantic.
Yeah.
But because we see that poster early on, it's almost like it's this call, it's like a sign from the universe that this is something to pursue. And that's, I think, what you've kind of touched on, Sophie, about her being open to romance, that there are these signs that she's really willing to give herself over to it.
This is the point where I'm going to obnoxiously read from my own interview with Claire Denis, because, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is what Claire Denis said about Etta James. She said that she was the exemplary woman for the film, and that when she first spoke to Juliette Binoche, she told her, "You have to consider Etta James, what kind of a woman she was. She wanted more love, more and more. She would go on stage with a provocative dress. She was asking so much to be loved, to be able to love. Etta James is a real, real loose figure. I always told Juliette, that's your figure for the film, Etta James, a special woman. She started singing when she was 12 in cabaret. She is a wild, wild woman screaming for love." You intuited it without having to read that, which shows just how integral she is.
Mm.
As an emotional and singing avatar for Juliette Binoche's character.
And this romance with the character played by Paul Blanc, a chap called Sylvain, this is probably what leads to the saddest part of the film for me, where she is clearly having a lovely time with this chap and then goes to meet a friend who's a gallery owner who raises the point that he's working class and should she really be hanging out with him. And initially she bats it off and confidently has believes in her love with him. And then almost in the next scene, she has to raise that query. And it's a real shame to see that happen, and that and just how that influence of that one comment can make her question her romance like that.
Mm.
But that's maybe my favourite scene in the film is this.
What's your favourite scene?
The dance.
Oh, okay, so not the manipulative.
Oh no. Yeah. So for me, just that magical moment of that music kicking and the light kind of changes, and that's where we get the poster image as well. There is another particular moment during a walk in the countryside that I really got this sense of catharsis from.
I mean, I think it's the first time she kind of really lets herself go.
This is she's taken herself on a break to a country
with her
house,
fellow artists and like gallerists and people from her milieu,
and we're again getting more non-statements that don't really mean much as we're walking
obnoxious.
And she does just have this moment where she snaps and she cakes her boots in mud and storms off, and it's just it's wonderful to watch. And Binoche is just fantastic in this.
Oh, she's great.
This months ago now that I first saw the film, which was at LFF, and when we did our roundup show, I brought up the fact that when I was on Twitter and scrolling through reactions, I then went on to record, and I said that I couldn't remember who it was, but someone had said that she's so fantastic in it because she's just got so much feeling in her face.
Yeah, she emotes so much.
And I brought this up to someone a couple of weeks ago who then said, yeah, that was Sophie who said that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? That's amazing.
Yeah, Sophie, what do you could talk about Juliette Binoche's performance and that feeling in her face?
First of all, thank you for mythologizing me with some Twitter backstory. Much appreciated. Yeah, well, her eyes just, I don't know how she does it. They seem to flicker with light. And I think she's very good at listening. and reacting. So she seems so natural in all these situations, which are predominantly situations that are intimate. Like, she's an artist, but we don't really see much of, like, there's one scene where she kind of pours a whole load of paint on a giant canvas cathartically, but for the most part that what we're seeing in her life are her intimate situations, and she just is so natural and so responsive and so unpredictable that it just feels like raw. And I'm not, you know, I'm not exactly qualified to say this, but she herself has said she is, I mean, she says it in that interview with Josh, I believe, that she is Isabel. And I also interviewed Juliette Binoche in Cannes and was asking her questions about, you know, because when I first watched the film, I was a little bit worried about her character's total lack of filter or boundaries. A guy comes along, she'll listen to him, he'll make advances on her, she'll be receptive, and she doesn't go into these situations detached. She feels in reaction to people, and so she's kind of defenseless, kind of vulnerable. And I was asking Juliette Binoche about this, and she was like, yeah, I'm the same. And maybe that's what makes a great artist, to just not shut yourself off. And she is a great artist, IMO.
I quite like also that, like, in the film, as you said, like, we don't see the actual artwork that she creates, but you know, almost because we're watching her inspiration unfold on screen, you know. And also the way that, like, I don't know, it's art comes from life, obviously, and the inspiration comes from, you know, our lived experience. And I like how the film focuses on that rather than the pretentious sort of high art analysis that comes with the finished product, you know?
Right, and a good contrasting figure is the worst character, the one who poisons her mind against her working class lover. And he is someone who, it's transparent that he's jealous, that he wants to be with Isabel. But unlike her, he is not naked and honest. He has to dress everything up in this really portentous, toxic way. So in a way, it's just, like you say, it's showing that she's just someone who is truly sensitive to life.
I just want to draw attention to the camera and editing, just in relation to this point, to really make Binoche's performance shine, because she, as much as this performance is like magnetic and emotional, it's rare that she delves into the easy emotional choices from a technical perspective. There's a handful of close-ups in the film of her by herself, rather than in a two-shot or in a moving one, like in the bar scene. So when you do just get that static close-up of her face, which has all that feeling, that made me well up, and I wasn't even sure why. It's not like this was like a completely manipulated emotional scene. Sometimes it's just that complete empathy that takes you over, and combined with exactly the right camera choice and editing and cut at the right moment to really have such a great
effect. What was the most emotional edit for you? When were you welling up?
There were three particular close-ups. I couldn't tell you exactly what scene it was in. I just remember that feeling of that close-up.
You know, the bathroom scene as well.
Yeah.
When she goes to speak to her friend and she goes through like a roller coaster of emotions in that sort of monologue. And you really do feel what she's feeling. She feels also extremely authentic, you know, as a well-rounded, complex human being, which I think I appreciated the most.
Yeah, it's disarming to see such a performance, you know. And again, I guess a reason why it feels that not exactly like a boilerplate rom-com is it doesn't feel like she's delivering lines. It feels like she's just reacting all the time.
Which great actors always are, those that sort of feel what in the moment what the other person is sort of delivering. Which is why I think the close-up on her when they don't cut, when the other person is talking, is because you see that, you know, you see on her face the reaction.
Yeah, it's just she manages to subvert just a basic shot reverse shot for these conversations so elegantly, and it never feels like they're being elongated for any other reason than they should be. Which is often the case with maybe doing something in one take, that you've done it like that and you can't cut away from it.
Yeah.
But she knows exactly what she wants to say and how she wants to make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really lovely to watch and just kind of get lost in those conversations, because they've been beautifully made as well as what's being said in them.
Mm.
And what you're saying about this type of female character, I don't think it's the kind of thing that would really encounter in an English film as well. I think this idea of the older woman romance film is something like Hampstead or Marigold Hotel. That is what like the trappings of it that we would have over here.
Like nice, like desexualized old
people.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And there's not much introspection there or understanding or concern or anything. It's just very much, isn't it nice that old people can
find love again?
Yeah.
If I may flag one exception, but it doesn't go all the way like Juliet. but Andrew Haig's 45 Years has this interesting sex scene, which is kiboshed for reasons, but it shows a hunger still present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good example.
Thank you.
What a film.
Yeah.
He's one of my favourite directors, I think.
Oh, well, we'll get you back for Lean On.
Please? Oh, yeah. I've seen it even.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm really excited.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I think we've got Charlie Plummer for that one as well.
Oh, he's great in it.
Yeah. All right. So we haven't really gone too much into spoiler stuff about what's happening with the plot on this. It's
not really a
spoilery
film.
Yeah, I think you do have these different little sequences with these different chaps. I really do love the final sequence, which in terms of credit sequences has maybe got more coverage than a lot of credit sequences out there will get. And I really love it.
It's incredibly experimental. It's great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I saw this in a relatively quiet screening, and then I saw it on a link as well. Sophie, I imagine the Cannes screening was pretty busy.
Oh, yeah, and Claire Denis was sat behind me.
Oh,
right.
Amazing.
So no pressure. Maybe stay for the credits on that one.
Yeah. There was a really long standing ovation. Oh. It was lovely.
So I'm really.
And she's got this lovely grizzled laugh.
I'm really curious to ask you then, particularly standing ovation. So this film is these series of conversations, and then we go to a final conversation, which is with Gérard Depardieu's character, who is a recently made single man who is a psychic and is about to give Isabelle advice on romance and what she should do with the various men that she has met, or perhaps maybe there's another man that could place himself in this conversation as well. And during this conversation, he kind of loops back onto making the same points again and again, and mid conversation the credits just start appearing. Claire mentions this in the interview, of going back to this idea of looping this endless conversation, these endless cycles. And it's an odd moment because we're so used to you cut to black, or the film definitively ends, and then maybe you get a image related to the film and that's where the credits are. But this is just mid-scene. And I'm really curious to ask you what that reaction was like, whether it was a bit everyone confused and then started clapping, or was it just everyone silent until the end?
Yeah, I think we waited it out. Like, you don't clap while Gérard is still talking. But it's out there now, but he was a bit of a punchline because nobody knew he was in it. And it was because, again, the way that it's initially shot, that conversation, he's introduced in a conversation where he's an indecipherable figure sat in a car, and you're like, oh, who's that having a chat in a car? And then you go in and you're like, is it? And then, yep, there he is.
Yeah.
And he's such a distinctive physical figure these days.
Yes, I mean, his nose alone in this scene is such a focal point for the screen. It's it's a phenomenal performance by itself. And then he gets a massive title card as well, just for appearing at the end. He's maybe like fifth billed, and his name almost covers the whole bottom half of the screen. It's great. I really love those credits. Yeah, and it's tied in with a string of other really lovely credit deployment, and ones that I think maybe have worked or haven't. Doing a bit of writing on this, which I'll put in the description of this episode as well. I do just want to quickly mention Tinder Sticks. doing fabulous music. Your eyes have lit up immediately as I've said that, Sophie.
Oh, just because, I mean, they're a long-time collaborator with Claire Denis. I think you most especially feel them in her previous film, Bastards, which is tonally a world away from Let the Sunshine In. Bastards, I would be like, approach with caution, this is exceptionally grim. Let the Sunshine In, I would be like, flock to it. Yeah.
Which actually, it did make me laugh during the scene where she was saying that she can only get off by calling the banker a bastard as well.
I didn't pick up on that. Yeah. I've seen it three times.
All right. Just go out and check out Let the Sunshine In. It is in cinemas, and I think I pretty much say this every week. It's a cinema film. Go watch it in the cinema. But if you can't, it is on demand as well on Curzon Home Cinema. Anyone else? Have you got any final points before I wrap this up?
Can I do some plugs?
Do some plugs. Plug okay. What you like.
So you know how we were talking about older women sex scenes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually have a piece. It's not just about older women. It's about female desire, flagging 10 movies that explore female desire. And that will be on the BFI website. And in that, there's one, a Chilean film called Gloria, which is about a woman in her 50s.
Oh, that's the Sebastian Lelio.
Yeah, Sebastian Lelio. And it's a woman in her 50s who gets to enjoy an explicit sex scene. So if you're hungering for more of that.
And that's out this week. Great. So we can put that in the description as well. Make sure you do go and read that article too. And once you've seen Let the Sun Shine In, do check out Curzon Home Cinema. I would say the other film you need to be prioritising right now is 120 BPM. Mm. I plugged this on the last episode. Mm-hmm. We got the interview with Robin Campillo. Do go and check that out. I think that's just an absolutely phenomenal film. For me, I don't think there will be a better film this year, but like that's definitely hyperbolic.
Mm.
But it's such a wonderful, wonderful film. And before we sound off, I just want to highlight Josh Slater-Williams, who did email in after we requested reviews of 120 BPM after last week's episode. 120 beats per minute, more like 120 stars per minute. Am I right? So thanks for that, Josh. And also Alessandro Capuano, who emailed in this week to highlight Custody, which I still haven't seen. But he says it's a little masterwork of tension and misdirection, constantly shifting between sides and playing the cards of ambiguity and the untold. The thrills are built thanks to a suspenseful use of sound whose crescendo is really wise and ingenious. The misdirecting element is guaranteed by Legrand's use of the camera, by leading the cast's outstanding performance, and by a screenplay evolving in unpredictable ways, showing the personal tragedies hidden behind closed doors. I must check out Custody as well before that leaves cinemas. If you've got thoughts on Let the Sun Shine In, Custody, Isle of Dogs or BPM, any of our recent releases, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com for next week's show. If you haven't already, do make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Acast. And if you feel like it, leave us a review or comment as well. Until next week, though, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kelly.
Bye-bye.
And it's goodbye from Sophie.
Au revoir.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.